WBZH 910 AM, W245CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
News,
app.
I'm Rena Roy. Life in prison without parole for Lori Vallow Daybell. An Idaho judge sentencing Daybell for killing her two children and conspiring to kill her husband's first wife. The property manager at Mar-a-Lago appeared today in Miami federal court. Carlos de Oliveira is accused of attempting to erase subpoenaed security footage of classified documents former President Trump kept at his Florida home. De Oliveira was told to hire a local attorney and return to court for arraignment. The Trump campaign creating a legal defense fund for the former president's allies. ABC's John Santucci.
The reality is that if someone has you on the hook, either paying you or taking care of your legal defense, the question is loyalty. Are you going to be honest? Are you going to be truthful? And part of the reason why De Oliveira was charged by special counsel Jack Smith was for lying about a conversation he allegedly had with Donald Trump and Walt Nauta and others about deleting that surveillance footage.
This is ABC News. Renewed pain at the pump, gas prices at an eight-month high in the middle of the summer driving season.
Our oil reserves are the lowest they've been in 8 years. The price for oil has gone up, and also this time of year, naturally, a bit more people are driving. It means the demand for gas is going up. All of those factors means you are likely going to probably pay a little bit more at the gas pump, although for some perspective, we are still about 50 cents cheaper we were for a gallon of gas than we were this time last year.
ABC's Trevor Ault. New efforts to control a massive fire aboard a car carrier.
A ship carrying over 3,700 cars that's been burning for days off the coast of the Netherlands is now being towed to a new location. According to Dutch officials, it's all part of an effort to get it away from shipping lanes and try to salvage the ship. The boat was traveling from Germany to Egypt when the fire ignited last week, killing at least one Indian crew member and injuring at least seven others as they jumped overboard. Officials suspect it was an electric car that started the blaze. Inez de la Quatera, ABC News.
Rena Roy, ABC News.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, I'm Jimmy Kuska. Here's what you need to know in Amory. One person is dead after a crash in Rusk County on Friday. The sheriff's office said the crash happened on Highway 40 near Hutchinson Road in the town of Big Bend, or about 6 miles southwest of Bruce. The crash involved a pickup truck and a semi-truck, with the pickup truck driver found dead at the scene. The semi-truck driver was treated for injuries and released. The crash is being investigated. Two people charged with felony mistreatment of animals in Burnett County in May will have to pay restitution after the court accepted a plea deal. Dorothy and Gabriel Auger had the felony charge dismissed and instead pleaded guilty to intentionally failing to feed an animal, a misdemeanor. The pair was ordered to pay $628 in restitution. According to the criminal complaint, a veterinarian found a dead horse on their farm and said that it was extremely malnourished. Bones from another horse were also found on the farm. The pleas were accepted earlier this month. The National Weather Service in the Twin Cities says today will be pleasant, with temperatures getting to around 80 degrees, but a warm-up is coming later this week. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
With one call, the Civic Media Network of stations can deliver your business's message to the entire state of Wisconsin.
Or your hometown.
Marketing plans that work for your business. One call can do it all. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
It's so hot. Wait. Now it's going to rain? It is summer in Wisconsin.
As much as we love it, we love to hate it too. Find a forecast you can count on, along with the in-depth details you need, only from the Civic Media Weather Team.
These extended conditions have led us into a flash drought. Sitting in these above average temperatures with minimal rain has swiftly altered the local climate.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
AM Radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. It also delivers vital emergency information when your community needs it most. A new bill in Congress would ensure AM radio stays in your car, because when cell and internet services are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Front.us.
Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to be with you today. We got a humdinger of a week of shows. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to jinx anything. But I got to tell you, Thursday is going to be kind of fun around here. So we'll talk about that coming up here in a little bit. We are going to be having Joe Harrington's going to join us. If you did not see the editorial of the Minnesota Reformer, he and his organization, Our Streets Minneapolis, basically they're trying to push a fairly, I don't want to know if extreme, a very kind of huge change for Interstate 94, basically getting rid of Interstate 94 between, I think it says Marion, between Marion and 35W, but I mean, I think it's just basically throughout the entire Midway, including Cedar Riverside, it would get rid of the interstate 94 east and west and replace it with a boulevard. We'll talk to him about that and kind of talk about some of the lingering questions his essay left out there that I think actually need to be addressed before we go down a path like that. That's coming up here in about a half an hour. Patrick, how are we today?
I'm a little bit in a little bit of a sour mood. I was a fan of Pee Wee Herman, so the death of Paul Rubens has been kind of tough today for me.
I'll touch on that coming up here in the 4 o'clock hour to start that hour off there. Yeah, but in case you did miss it, yes, and Paul Rubens had passed away. Yeah, he's 70 years old, cancer. We'll talk more about him coming up here. I did this weekend go to Barbie. And I want to take a few minutes about two different things here. And it was interesting. So yesterday morning, I went to the showing at 11 o'clock at AMC in Southdale. I'll get back to that in a second. But I ran early that morning because I still am recovering. I got to kind of keep up with that, all that stuff. And I went and ran, and I was leaving the gym, and there's an older guy that was working the counter. I said, I hope you have a good plan for the day. I said, well, I'm about to get dragged inside to go watch the Barbie movie. And he goes, oh, I'm so sorry. I said, really? He said, well, I didn't mean any offense or anything like that. I was like, well, no, it's not, but if you just, you know, it seems to be a pretty popular movie. I don't think there's a nefarious agenda. And I said, I got two daughters. They want to go to it. I'm not going to pass it up. I like pop culture stuff. What Greta Gerwig has done with that movie is stunning. As a matter of fact, I got to mention, my wife did not want to go see this movie. She thought it was going to be fairly, you know, cheap. I mean, slapstick comedy, it's Barbie. Hey! And that sort of thing. And the same reason why it took me like 8 years before I finally watched Breaking Bad, because, you know, when they introduced it, it's, you know, Walter White, you know, played by the guy from, you know, the Freddie Muniz show. He'd done comedy and he was doing the show as Walter White, and it's the wacky hijinks of a meth dealer. You know, you're like, okay, no. But then eventually everyone's like, okay, you got to go see it. So eventually I did. I'm like, wow, yeah, I missed. I should have been there from the get-go. The Barbie movie is very Barbie. Okay, it's very Barbie. I'm not ruining anything when I say they start the movie out in a phenomenal way, because I think one of the things that is lost, and I, once again, I got to give Greta Gerwig a lot of credit here. This movie is sensational. They started off by basically doing this homage to 2001: A Space Odyssey, where basically they point out that before Barbie, all the dolls pretty much anyone played with were babies. And the point of playing was to teach you how to be a mom, and you care for your baby and all these things. And it was kind of what was set up. And then came Barbie, And all of a sudden, things changed dramatically. All of a sudden, you had, it was a friend who was the cool friend, who was you know, wearing fashion, and it was doing her hair in fun ways and stuff like this. And it changed the dynamic dramatically. And I thought that was a phenomenal way to start this movie off. I'm not going to give up too much of the plot. I'll say what you pretty much can figure out from watching the trailers. That Barbie starts to have, Barbie's in Barbie Land. And Barbie Land is basically a land where Barbie and Barbies rule. And they are, you know, the Barbies are the president, Barbies are the Supreme Court, Barbies are the astronauts, Barbies are the doctors, Barbies are these. And the Kens are there, and a few others. The Kens are there, but the Kens basically seem to be there only to make sure that, you know, they're there for Barbie. Whatever Barbie needs, the Kens are there for, which is kind of Barbie's world as it is right now. And Barbie starts having a little bit of a crisis. Without going into too many details, they basically have to go to the real world from the Barbie world. So Barbie, who's Margot Robbie, and Ken, who's Ryan Gosling, who's both of them are sensational in this movie, leave Barbie world and head to the real world. And I'm not giving up anything by saying I cannot applaud this movie enough for doing it so simply this way and pointing out something that I think everybody needs to understand, is that there is obviously this massive culture shock for Barbie when she comes to the real world. But one of the things that becomes very crystal clear is that as they're in this world, and we have this world where we're dealing with equality, we're dealing with women's rights, we're dealing with, you know, getting rid of misogyny, that you're really not. What you really have is half measures to make it seem like you're doing something to have a more equitable world here. But the reality is it's still a man's world and white men predominantly. And that's just that. And there's just this thing. She goes from this world where the Barbies can be anything and they can do anything they want. And, you know, to come into a world where men are like, we're for equal rights. We've got gender neutral bathrooms. And, you know, this goes back to something I have been saying kind of for years as a man. And I understand that I'm just on the outside of this looking at this. But I say to myself, you know, equality is not 18 cents less an hour. Equality is not, that's not equality. Equality is everyone gets paid the same amount. But if women bring this up, they're complaining, they're whining, they're bitching, they're moaning. They sometimes imply there's that certain time of the month. Oh, look at them. Look how they're going like this. They dismiss you any way possible by pointing out the obvious. That it's not equity if you're paying people less. And once again, minority women are even lower on that scale. And until you fix that one major little hinge point, you can have as many gender-neutral bathrooms or token executives as you want. The reality is that it's not equity. And then they go the further point of pointing out that, as I talked about with the executives, that there really is an equality. The vast majority of corporations are run by men, predominantly white men, and that there might be one or two exceptions, but the vast majority of companies are there. To a point, I'm stunned Mattel actually allowed this movie to be done, because this movie is not, I mean, it's got fun and fluff for the kids. They'll enjoy it. They'll have a good time. But my God, is the message with this movie one of the strongest messages, is that equality is not just something you can say is done or you're dealing with half measures. Equality means equality. Fairness equals fairness. Those are things. And regardless if it's women, the black population, the Hispanic population, the Native American population, the Asian population, LGBTQIA plus population. You can't say it's equality unless it truly is equality. And no paranoid conservative white people who are against this movie. And by the way, the only people who really should be against this movie are people who actively know that the system is rigged and the system is unfair to women and minorities in the LGBTQIA community. They know this and they want to keep it the way it is because they benefit from the unfairness. Simple. That's it. When you see right-wing trolls out there burning Barbie dolls, that's because he knows that basically this movie calls out the misogyny of this country and of the world to a point on a very with a sharp edge, you just, you know, surgical precision. It is unbelievable how good this movie does. It's good on a lot of levels. It highlights the inadequate job we've done with dealing with equity and the unfair standards that women have to exist on in this world. Undoubtedly, it does an amazing job of appealing to, and I didn't even think this was possible in this day and age, but if you watch Barbie, you could take your grandparents to Barbie. Baby boomers, Generation Xers, millennials, Generation Z, anyone who sees this movie will appreciate this movie. It appeals to everyone on all levels. And I didn't even think you could make a movie like that anymore. I didn't think you could make a movie like that where basically every generation goes into it and enjoys it for on its own level. That's phenomenal. How she pulled that little trick off, I'll never know. It's a phenomenal story about a daughter and a mother, the realities between the acting. There is such subtle acting there. America Ferrera is in there. The subtle acting that they have in those moments they have between the mother and the daughter, my daughters gave their mother a hug when they got out of that movie. They enjoyed that. But it even goes further, and this is one of the great parts about it. It even goes, it's so about equity that it points out the toxic positions that men are forced into, that men are stuck in, that they shouldn't be there, the unhealthy trajectories of their lives that they're on, that they should get off of because they only go along with it because, well, that's what's happened. That's what you do. And even they know this is not good. I'm dead serious. I know this movie was good and I knew it had more of a message, but I came out of that movie stunned at how good it was. And without a doubt, I mean, I got to think it's going to mop up at the Oscars. I've got to think it's going to, because what Greta Gerwig did is take a movie that is about a doll and turn it into an insanely good requiem on the failures of American society in dealing with discrimination and in the lack of equity. To give you an idea how good this movie was. Now, I went and saw Endgame. All right. You know, Patrick, you Avengers Endgame. Okay. One of the first times I was ever in a movie theater and I saw people in the audience go nuts was Rocky IV. When Rocky knocks, you know, all of a sudden clocks Drago really well. And there was a guy that was in front of me, says, "Yeah, get him," stands up and starts screaming. I'm like, wow, welcome to the 80s. Thank you. Were you in a theater that went kind of nuts when Endgame was, when that whole final like hour of Endgame went on?
I did not remember anybody going crazy.
I remember the audience. We had tickets on the opening weekend. I had to get them a month in advance. I remember we went and saw this, and the audible screams of pure delight at two points when Captain America pulled up Thor's hammer and started beating the living daylights out of Thanos with it was one. The second was the when he said Avengers Assemble, and you know the entire audience just went crazy, just went nuts. So I've seen this happen. There's a speech in this. I'm not going to say anything about it. I'm not going to. It is all-time great speeches. It's Charlie Chaplin in The Great Dictator. If you've not seen that speech, it's as good as it gets. This is up there. This speech is phenomenal about the injustices in the world that women face in our modern society. It is about 2 or 3 minutes long, and it is spectacular because it nails it perfectly. The character who delivers it gets done, and my wife, who never yelled at the Marvel movies, is a relatively timid individual, screams, "Oh, yeah!" I'm like, oh my God. Now, there comes a moment where I was like, hey, she's not yelling that because I'm a bad guy. I'm with the equal rights and equity. Hey, I'm not, you're all looking at me like I'm, no, I'm with, go team, go, yay. I'm with you on this. Oh, it's good. Go see it. Seriously, go see it. Yes, it's a lot of Barbie and it's a lot of pink. But that movie, considering especially how millennials and Generation Z are, it resonates with them. This is one of those movies which is going to leave an impact on society. Jeff, hold on. I'll get your call in after the break. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Really is no place like home. Hi, I'm Mary T. of Mary T. Home Health. When you're faced with an illness or an injury, being able to stay at home and receive care is important. Our home health offers a wide range of services, including skilled nursing, physical, occupational, and speech therapies, AIDS, homemakers, in-home respite care, and 24/7 live-in care. We'll work closely with your primary care provider to come up with an individualized plan for you. Learn more today at MaryTInc.com.
You hear a lot about Rudy Luther Toyota's hybrid cars, but maybe you're asking yourself, are they worth it? Let me say from experience, absolutely. I have a Toyota Sienna hybrid, and the proof is in the gas tank. Before my hybrid, I was filling up my tank once a week. Now it's consistently every 2 weeks. I did the math, and my hybrid is saving me over $1,000 every year. And the Toyota hybrids are some of the most stylish and comfortable vehicles you'll ever drive. Now's the time to get a Toyota hybrid. Set up a time to test drive one today at Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Hey, it's Patrick for Zero Res. Allow me to give you a couple of the most important cleaning tips that you need to know. Vacuuming is not sufficient to maintain the cleanliness and lifespan of your carpet, period. My friends at Zero Res use their platinum-rated cleaning system that safely and effectively removes all that deeply embedded nasty dirt, dander, and bacteria. Not only does the patented Zero Res process clean better than anything on the market, surfaces dry faster, and your home and business will stay cleaner longer guaranteed. July is National Carpet Cleaning Month, and because of that, check out this amazing deal Zero Res has going. Zero Res is offering 3 rooms starting at just $129 and get a 4th room free. It's also the perfect time of year to get your air ducts cleaned this month and take 20% off any air duct cleaning. Call 952-ZERO-RES or go to ZeroResMinnesota.com and ask for the AM 950 special. That's Zero Res.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 82 cents on the dollar. That's what women make, is 18 cents less a dollar. And I've said this before when this has been brought up. It blows my mind that there are women on the Republican side who are saying, I deserve less money. And they do. That's what they say. And I don't know what to do with that. I don't, because I'm not a woman, so I don't want to. It sounds crazy. It sounds, at least from my perspective. But if you want to deal with equity, stop talking about these half measures and, you know, in programs and institutions, and you painted the lobby pink. Great. Fine. You're helping out with the, you know, Breast Cancer Awareness Foundation. Fantastic. That's wonderful. Fix the pay discrepancy and get women in top executive positions, including women of color. Ta-da. That will go a long way to fixing this problem. And like I said, Greta Gerwig did this so well, because from the perspective of Barbie and Ken coming from the Barbie world into the real world, for them to see this world, it just showed you how little we've really done to deal with equity and how, well, I shouldn't say that, how far we still need to go to deal with equity. Jeff is in Cambridge. He's been holding. Welcome on in, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm out walking the dog, and you mentioned Barbie, so I had to call. Four quick things.
All right.
The opening scene was just utterly fantastic.
It was. That was very good.
There are pieces of that that I forgot from the original 2001. Second, there's a comment from, like, the director. It's from a voice above saying, if you wanted to prove that point, you probably should have picked somebody other than Margot Robbie.
Yeah, no, it's Helen Mirren plays the narrator.
Yeah.
And by the way, let's make sure, Jeff, let's not give away any plot points here, okay?
But
and she says, and they're talking about, you know, I'm getting uglier and uglier, and Helen Mirren pops up and says, if you're going to try to make this point in this film, you probably shouldn't have cast Margot Robbie, who is actually quite stunningly pretty, and as she is.
Yeah. Okay, and then two more quick ones. America Ferrera and Rhea Perlman did fantastic.
Unbelievable. Both of them. I mean, America Ferrera should be up for the Oscar for that. That was an amazing job she did with that role.
Yeah. I'm 67, never had a daughter, I only have a son, and I just loved it. It was great.
All right. Hey, Jeff, thank you very much. You're kind of proving my point. I appreciate that. And this is nothing against Oppenheimer. Go see Oppenheimer. It's supposed to be quite good. I'm actually going to go probably see that in the next few weeks myself. But this is, you know, I'm listening to, it just so happens, the Smartless podcast has Greta Gerwig on it. And I've been listening to that. And they've talked a little bit about this. And, I mean, the long process of bringing this to the movie. And that, you know, it was in 2020 that they're, or 2020, they were first approached, and then the pandemic, and they were writing the thing, and initially she wasn't going to direct, and then when she decided to direct and how to kind of go with it, you know, it's a phenomenal film. God, there are some things in the second half where I was just cackling out loud laughing. Not only because they were funny, and it has to do with Ken, and I'm not going to say any more, has to do with Ken, but because that cut to the core. Some of the stuff at the end of that just cut to the core. Quick side note. Do movie theater companies realize people want to go to the movies if there's a good movie out there? And we had Top Gun last year. You had the Super Mario movie earlier this year. So I go, it's a Sunday at 11. I bought my tickets in advance. I have my little circle code ready to go to thing. And there's no one there. There's no one there. And there's a lot of people like sitting around like, where's the person for the tickets? I don't know, you know. And I finally said, well, we got tickets. Let's go grab our seats. I mean, if someone says, are these your tickets? I have the proof that we got the tickets. So we went and grabbed our seats. We came on out. The concession stand had probably about 100, or like it wasn't 100. It was probably 30, 35 people waiting in line. And I'm like, what is going on here? And I realized where the guy that was supposed to be taking tickets was. Everyone was working concessions because they clearly did not have enough people working. Now, I don't know if people called in sick, people didn't show up, whether it's the case maybe, but it seemed like they had quite a few people there. It just also seemed like nothing, you know, it was just overwhelmed. And the movie was really good. The experience at the movie wasn't. It was really bad. I mean, there were no lid cups. You had to go back. You know, it took us 25 minutes. Thank God there was about 40 minutes worth of previews for this movie. The minute it became popular, every movie coming out in the next, you know, 6 months put their preview in front of it. So that's why it is. So, but we got there. I was there 10 minutes before the movie was slated to start. It took 25 minutes to get through, to get just, you know, three popcorns and three sodas and get into the theater. Because they didn't have, like I said, straws or lids or anything like this. And I said, okay, I get it. You guys might have been caught off guard, but this was the second weekend of this film. I can't understand why this is so bad. And I've talked to other people too, and they said, yeah, they've gone to movies and it's like they're almost completely ill prepared. And I don't know if it's the movie companies have cut staff because the pandemic, and I get it. It was tough. It's bad. But people are coming back to the movies. And the quickest way for you to basically turn them away is to give them a miserable experience. Because right now I could go home, put a bag of microwave popcorn in the microwave, grab a soda from the sink, or the thing from the where I go and brew it up myself. No, from the fridge, grab a soda, grab a bag of popcorn. In 4 minutes, I'm back downstairs sitting on a couch and I can watch a movie. I'd rather watch a movie in a theater. But if the experience is as bad as it was, I can tell you right now, what's going to kill movie theaters is not the movies, it's the theaters themselves. And that's a bit of a problem. And I'm concerned after watching that. I mean, this is one of the big mall ones, Southdale. It's supposed to be run pretty well, and it was a mess. And so just keep your expectations in line, or I don't know, maybe... I'm not going to tell you to sneak, food and your beverages into the movie theater, but, just prepare yourself. You might as well get there 30 minutes early, because if their staffing is this as bad as it is, it's going to take you that long just to get popcorn and soda. So, but at least we got, I guess, with reserved seats now, it's not nearly the big deal as it used to be. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Joe Harrington from R Streets Minneapolis joins us to talk about his essay in the Minnesota Reformer. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
I can't shut off this stereo.
Would you let animals pick your insurance? You really need to experience mayhem to get the best rates? Or how about a celebrity quarterback or fake university saving you money? There's a lot of marketing stunts when it comes to insurance, but what you really need is someone looking out for you. Call Array Insurance, and they will work hard to find you the best insurance coverage and rates. So avoid gimmicks and call Cheryl at Array, 763-504-3067. Or arrayinsurance.com. Array Insurance, working hard for you.
The Powderhorn Art Fair is returning to Powderhorn Park to celebrate its 32nd anniversary, August 5th and 6th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day. The fair will feature a vibrant and diverse selection of art from over 150 exhibiting artists from across the country. Whether you're just starting an art collection or a seasoned buyer, they'll have the perfect piece for you. Plus, there's more. Immersive art installations offer fairgoers a chance to explore interactive experiences that transport them into an artist's vision. In addition to all the fantastic art, over a dozen food vendors serving up sweet and savory delights will be ready for you and other hungry fairgoers. A family zone will offer creative activities for kids of all ages and entertainment each day. The fair and activities are free to attendees. Make plans to head to Powderhorn Park on August 5th and 6th. Learn more at powderhornartfair.com.
I'm Angela Warner for Warner Stellium. Sometimes appliances break. Other times you spend years wishing they would. We get it. That's why right now we're paying you to upgrade with our trade-in sale. We'll pay you $50 for each appliance you replace. Our in-store specialists take out the guesswork of wondering what's the best one and which one will fit. Then Warner Stellium professional crews will deliver, install, and take your old stuff away, saving you time and money. So outsource your stress and shop family-owned Warner Stellium.
With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilia. Sunshine today with a high of 86, then tonight clear with a low of 64. For more than 40 years, the Great Wall Restaurant has been serving up Szechuan and Mandarin favorites. The Great Wall is located just north of 50th in France on the Minneapolis-Edina City line. Check them out at greatwallrestaurant.us.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. We've had to start addressing the fact that, two things. One, the history of how our major road system was built, which unfortunately was built upon racism usually, as they built these major highways across not only this city, but across the country. But as well, the fact that they have more problems than, they generally cause more problems than they solve at times, in regards to how that they're designed. We are currently in the position of reimagining some highways, particularly 94 from the stretch from 35E to 35W. And the organization, Our Streets Minneapolis, had an essay written by Joe Harrington this morning in the Minnesota Reformer. I want to talk about that. Joe Harrington is a student in St. Paul studying urban geography and environmental policy. He is a GIS and data organizer for Our Streets Minneapolis. And Our Streets Minneapolis works to put people first by transforming transportation and infrastructure in the Twin Cities and at the state level. We do this by making our streets places where people can easily and comfortably walk, bike, roll, and use public transit. Joe, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Hi there, Matt. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the time talking to you.
All right. So first of all, let's talk about your essay. When it comes to I-94, let's consider people, not cars. There's a lot of suggestions on what's going to happen here. With Interstate 94, particularly once again from 35E to 35W. The Rondo neighborhood's been talked about a lot here. Why don't you just start off by talking a little bit about what's going on right now and then kind of get into what Our Streets Minneapolis wants to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So starting off with this Rethinking I-94 project, and the real idea of the project started back in 2016 when then MnDOT Commissioner Charlie Zelli initiated the project. And I-94 between Minneapolis and St. Paul, like many other roadways in the U.S., is reaching the end of its useful life. The infrastructure has been there for over 60 years, and we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to kind of reevaluate and reimagine what we want this corridor to be for the next 100 years or so. And, you know, where we're at right now in that process, Our Streets Minneapolis has worked really hard to center community in this conversation because so often in these past highway and other urban planning decisions, community voices were ignored, and we want to center them in the conversation here. As you mentioned earlier, systemic racism behind highway planning and placement has led to these historic and ongoing harms that disproportionately fall on communities of color along these corridors. And if we continue to, you know, now that we're reevaluating the highway, if we continue to ignore these harms, we're, you know, guilty of being complicit in perpetuating them for future generations to come. And because transportation is such an intersectional issue, it's important to environmental justice, it's important to community health, communities' economies, people's mobility, we have to really think carefully before we spend a huge amount of money on a mega project. So I-94, Rethinking I-94, and what the Twin Cities Boulevard vision has become is a community-driven vision to reimagine the corridor, do a highway-to-boulevard conversion, and has really been a community vision. You know, we've knocked over 30,000 doors along the corridor. 70% of those people who responded are in favor of studying a highway to boulevard conversion that centers, you know, people and places that are, you know, traditionally marginalized, but providing them with access to transportation infrastructure that actually works for them. So having diverse options for transit, biking, rolling, walking, reconnecting street grids, and allowing for some redevelopment for community business and affordable housing. That's kind of the project from 90,000 feet, you know.
Well, and very well said, by the way. Let's expand a little bit about this interstate to boulevard idea, just to make sure everyone understands what we're talking about here. It sounds basically like you want to fill in the gap that is 94, especially particularly through the Midway, and on top of, you know, at street level where the street level is now, not the interstate level, but the street level. You know, flush that out and turn it into a boulevard. Is it? You know, are we thinking something like Summit Avenue, or what kind of boulevard are we kind of talking about here?
Yeah, so we're promoting an idea that's actually been studied in other parts of the U.S. Cities like Syracuse, Rochester, Duluth, even here in Minnesota, are at various different points of scoping, evaluating, studying, or implementing a similar project. But what we're advocating for is a multimodal boulevard. So what that means is that, you know, the trench that I-94. You know, has through all of the communities along the corridor. So that's from, you know, Merriam Park to Frogtown, Cedar Riverside, Seward, Hamlin Midway, Rondo, others. All of these communities have been subjected to these harms, as we just said. And we have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to both, you know, reconnect the street grid, reimagine the infrastructure there so, you know, people not only have better access to goods and services, but they can bike through that area safely. They can walk and roll through that area safely. They have access to really good, high-quality transit. So what that means in the context of a highway to boulevard conversion is that there would still be some through traffic lanes, but there would also be dedicated space for public transit, for biking, for walking, for green space. And then the remaining land that the highway and the highway trench and the frontage roads currently occupy could be redeveloped into housing and community businesses and green space. So all of these things are definitely something that our community voices that we've been centering in our conversation have been asking for. And it's something that we have been, you know, pushing MnDOT to both study, evaluate, and eventually ultimately implement. But all of these cities across Minnesota, across the U.S., went over major surgery in the 1960s when highways were built. Mm-hmm. And it is true that these areas didn't have the highways prior to that, and they had vibrant communities, and they were targeted for destruction oftentimes because of its high, you know, percentage communities of color. So this is something that's, you know, maybe seen as radical to some, but we're kind of in a state, both with these systemic harms in our city and around the country, these, you know, racist planning policies, these environmental justice issues, these transportation issues, the climate crisis. It's very intersectional. So the highway to boulevard conversion is the best way to address those corridor-wide for the 100,000 people who live along the corridor.
So I'm going to, and just make sure we understand this. This would change. This boulevard would run from, it looks like, Marion Street in St. Paul. So just to the west of Rice Street. Marion Street through Midway, past 280, across the river, over to basically 55 where it hits 35W. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. That's the project corridor as MnDOT has defined it for the Rethinking I-94 project. So that's where we have the opportunity to make, you know, the biggest impact as far as, you know, repairing these systemic harms and also protecting our climate and environment as well. So it's the communities along that entire corridor who are affected.
I do like the images, and I'll encourage you to go read the story, the essay over it at MnPost, because it at least gives you an idea of what we're looking at here and just what you've got here. And it talks about, and right now, let's talk about what's there right now. You've got, what is it, 3 to 4 lanes. I think at some points it's 5 lanes on each side of 94 east-west, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So currently, you know, there are a couple of options. They presented 10 different options for rethinking I-94, and these are project alternatives that they're going to continue to evaluate over the next year or so during a scoping period. So what this is going to look like, there were, you know, options ranging from, you know, highway to boulevard conversion. Like, there were two options that were kind of promoting that vision. And that's a huge win for the Twin Cities boulevard concept, but we don't feel that it goes far enough to actually center community voices and community vision to make sure that their perspectives and their desires for the infrastructure in their communities are heard. So we're continuing to advocate for that work. But there were other options that range from a no build, so kind of leaving the highway in the state that it's currently in, a changing the frontage roads, so there'd basically be some local traffic lanes and some smaller through traffic lanes, all the way up to highway expansion, which would add additional lanes for, they call it a managed lane, for both east and westbound for additional traffic. That would be your HOV lane or a dedicated transit lane, but also continuing to have the same number of other travel lanes as well. So it would be a highway expansion that, according to MnDOT themselves, could bring up to 25% more traffic through the corridor.
What, you know, is there a reason why? Because one of the ones that got a lot of traction and people were talking about was a land bridge in the Rondo neighborhood particularly. But I don't see why you probably couldn't do this across, especially Cedar Riverside, over on the Minneapolis side. Is there a reason why the idea of a land bridge with being able to develop walkways, pedestrian walkways, bike lanes, maybe even transit lanes on top of these highways? Is there a reason why that your organization doesn't like that idea?
Well, we believe, and this is actually something that's come up a lot in our work in communities too, and this has been centered in all of the communities along the corridor, especially, you know, Cedar Riverside, Seward, Frogtown, Hamlin Midway, Merriam Park, other areas that, you know, are not going to be benefited by a land bridge. So the land bridge has a very narrow benefits, and it actually would only, you know, there's only a small percentage of the 100,000 people who live along the corridor that would actually be affected by that project. In any case, with a land bridge, it basically leaves MnDOT to build, rebuild, or expand the highway however they see fit without solving the harms that disproportionately fall on communities of color living in other places along the corridor, mm-hmm. from Minneapolis to St. Paul. And a land bridge, you know, it just doesn't go far enough. So we're hoping to see a vision that really centers all communities along the corridor and making sure that both these, you know, systemic racist harms and environmental harms, all of which that are both historic and ongoing, are addressed in the project.
All right. So I'm going to bring up, I was in a past life, a traffic reporter. I'm going to bring up the most obvious thing that when I see this project, I'm like, okay, wait a second here. I-94 is the major east-west road that carries 160, according to CARE 11, 160,000 cars per day. That is a fairly substantial amount of traffic. What your plan doesn't create, and I want to be very clear, and this is, it's just, you're going to take 94 and convert it to a boulevard. It doesn't make another major highway here. It basically has two lanes of traffic, but it's at intersections with traffic lights as it's boulevarded through. It doesn't have this. What has your study shown about the impact of taking a major highway that does have a substantial amount of traffic and removing it? Where would all that traffic go?
Yeah, that's certainly a very good question, and it's a concern that's cited by many at MnDOT, and it's something that people in the community ask about as well. And while it is a valid concern, just from the community standpoint, it's important to remember that a lot of communities along the corridor who bear the disproportionate burdens that the freeway infrastructure and land use and environmental issues, you know, kind of cause, a lot of them actually don't have access to a car. So we're trying to promote a vision that, you know, one, prioritizes the communities and helps them, you know, repair these historic harms, but two, makes an infrastructure that's also available for them to use. And talking about traffic in this conversation, it's very important to think about two concepts called induced demand and traffic evaporation. And these two concepts are related. They're the opposite. So induced demand is a principle that states as you widen a highway, the increased lanes make it more appealing to drive. And that could also be true as if we keep the number of lanes the same in this case. The increased traffic levels and the congestion in some cases are actually just as bad, if not worse, prior to highway expansion. You can look at the famous example in Houston. It's North America's biggest freeway, the Katy Freeway.
Yeah.
It's up to 26 lanes today. And it's kind of been falling trap to the, you know, it's actually, I guess, kind of a common problem in places around the U.S., the unstoppable appeal of highway expansion, as Bloomberg puts it. But they did a great study on that, and it shows that even, you know, after highway expansion, it only made congestion worse just 3 years later. So beyond Houston, this principle has been studied in other places, and that piece, Why Widening Highways Doesn't Bring Traffic Relief by Bloomberg, does a great job explaining it, as well as resources on our website. But the flip side is also true. So induced demand is more lanes, more traffic, but traffic evaporation is the opposite. So less lanes leads to less traffic in general terms. So as lanes are reduced, driving becomes less appealing. Commuters choose other options such as biking, walking, riding high-quality transit. And in some cases, trips are removed altogether by changes in land use. So if we redevelop areas along the highway land that's along the corridor there, if you had more housing, more access to goods and services, it would actually change people's – it could potentially change people's choices as where they live and how they locate themselves near their job or near – resources that they need to access in the community. And COVID too, you know, remote work has changed a lot of these things, and MnDOT hasn't really accounted for that in their modeling, you know, work from home. So there's also less trips in general on the highway.
Joe, I'm not going to disagree with you. Los Angeles is another city where they keep building lanes and it doesn't get any better. The reality is this is 94. This is the major east-west road. So you're going to have to divert a lot of traffic that's just cutting through the city, which means Oakdale, North St. Paul, Badness Heights, Little Canada, Roseville, Shoreview, New Brighton, they're going to pick up a heck of a lot more traffic. Or if it goes up 35W, Little Canada up onto 694. That traffic's going to be there. The reality as well is, my guess is going to be, is that with this design that you're putting forward, that just having looked at when we had traffic lights on 12, we had traffic lights on 169. Now, those weren't boulevards, but there were traffic lights there. What you end up doing is you're going to create a massive amount of traffic there. We're reducing the lanes from 3 to 5 lanes down to 2 lanes. So you're going to have a massive amount of traffic there, especially morning, afternoon drive. University Summit, any road that goes east-west in St. Paul as well is going to pick up an insane amount of traffic. I love it if we could be like Europe. I lived in Europe for 3 years. I would love it if we could be like that. That's just not something that's going to be attainable quickly. And so when you look at this, I mean, that's a big problem. I mean, that's a lot of vehicles. And it almost feels like what you're saying is, well, for the St. Paul people, we're going to make their life, we're going to try to make their lives better, whether or not there'll be more traffic. But for anyone on the 694 loop or 35E to 694 loop, we're going to make your lives a little worse because there's going to be a lot more traffic there. And that's, you know, that's just the way it is. I mean, there's just a lot of vehicles that just take 94 right through the city.
Well, I would just like to say, I guess, starting on the idea of quickness, you know, none of these changes are going to be quick. The project is actually probably not even, you know, 10 years out from construction. It's going to take a long time to scope, do environmental impact assessments, and then actually narrow down which project alternative will actually take place. And what we're talking about here, repairing systemic harms that have been happening for hundreds of years in the U.S. and even earlier elsewhere, is also not going to be a quick fix. So, you know, I understand that it seems, again, radical for, you know, us to kind of push for this type of thing. But one, you know, Minnesota and the Twin Cities really has to have and is having a reckoning around racial and environmental justice in the wake of the George Floyd murders and the events of the last couple of years. So we really need to think boldly and act boldly and plan boldly going forward to, you know, both respect, repair, and protect communities throughout the Twin Cities. It's not necessarily, maybe the commuting time is, you know, worsened for suburban commuters in some cases. We don't really know fully yet because this hasn't been studied to the full, you know, extent that MnDOT, we're pushing MnDOT to do an in-depth feasibility study. But it's not necessarily the idea of making it worse, because we're all better in the Twin Cities if our communities are protected from these disproportionate harms that benefit, you know, mostly commuters and fall disproportionately on these urban communities along urban highways. So I think we're all better when we do better in this case. And again, it's not going to be a quick fix. This is going to be a change that happens over a long period of time. Land use has to change. Higher investment in public transit has to change. But I do think, again, you know, this moment of racial reckoning here, as well as the climate crisis, all summer we've been dealing with wildfire smoke from Canada. And if these two factors are not really the impetus for thinking boldly and acting boldly and trying to change the way we plan and design and imagine our cities, then I'm not sure what will.
I agree with what a lot you're trying to do here, but I think we do need to ask the question of, okay, what do we do with the 160,000 vehicles? Because a boulevard's not going to be able to handle that. And so, as you say, it creates more locality. I live in Hopkins, and I go to St. Paul all the time. Go to the Science Museum, go to the XL Energy Center, go to the theater and stuff over there. If it's one of those things where now all of a sudden I'm going to add 30 minutes to my commute to get over there because we shut down one of the major roads and it's constantly busy, I don't know if that's, I think that I agree with a lot of what you're trying to do here, but I think that there has to be a practicality element of it. And it's easy. You're right. Climate change is bad. The racial injustice that created these highways is god awful. Highway 55. I was just reading about that one today. But I think the damage to a point has been done, and we have this a lot of traffic here, and just sort of saying it will go somewhere else. I think we have to have a better plan for that. I think it'd be a wash if you want to know the truth, as opposed to if you think just about the distance on 94 through St. Paul, through Minneapolis, up to 694. If you routed it around on just 694 and kind of remove that, I think that's kind of a wash. It's not adding too much time, gas, or anything like that. But you're going to have to put a major investment into the expansion of that highway to carry all those extra trucks that are no longer going through the Midway area. And so I think that there's just that, if that's the only thing here, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think there has to be an application of practicality here that you can't just sort of say, well, we hope it's okay. It's got to be, where does all those trucks go, or where all those vehicles go?
Yeah, I think we want to do more than hope it will be okay. And we want to have an actual viable study conducted by MnDOT or other organizations that can actually evaluate this, because, you know, we want to actually have a realistic idea using models that both, you know, encompass traffic evaporation and induced demand, but also talk about land use in a way that, you know, could actually model potentially what the land use changes would actually do towards the number of trips through that area, as we talked about traffic evaporation. But I just want to reiterate, you know, the damage has, you know, you mentioned that the damage has been done, but the damage is actually ongoing and will continue to harm generations into the future. You know, I'm in my 20s now. The next time that we reevaluate this corridor will probably be 80 to 100 years from now. And if we continue to perpetuate these harms and think about, you know, in terms of only using traffic as a metric, then we're going to continue to do the same urban planning and traffic and highway mistakes that planners have made in the past. Mm-hmm. And those were intentional then, and we just want to make sure we're not complicit in that today. But we're advocating for, you know, eventually to enact this proposal. But in the meantime, we have to study it. And we're pushing MnDOT to actually do a study in good faith that represents the community's voices and enacts that vision. But it has to be studied, and we're not, you know, we're not saying the traffic isn't a consideration, because it does weigh in a lot of people's minds. But in general, in the context of this climate crisis, in the context of repairing these harms on local communities, we really do have to think boldly. And I think that, you know, letting traffic be the only stopper of that is not necessarily the right way to move forward, because we do have other roads through the communities. And obviously, you know, we don't want to divert traffic elsewhere in the Twin Cities, but the harms that are on these disproportionately marginalized communities along the corridor have really high populations. Yeah. They've been historically harmed there. And we want to make sure to center them in this conversation as we reevaluate the corridor.
Joe Harrington from R Streets Minneapolis. Joe, I appreciate the time. I'll post the article up a little bit later on. And thank you very much. I appreciate your time today, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate your time. And I'd encourage everyone to fill out the MnDOT survey on this project to make their perspectives heard.
952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, shame-free dental office. If you're having a dental emergency, we'll try and get you in the same day you call, because we don't like to see anyone in pain, and we'll help you get through every appointment in the most pain-free way possible. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth, because they're the only ones you get.
Chambaud Family Dentistry in Hopkins and St. Paul. Find them online at ChambaudFamilyDentistry.com or call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH.
This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, weekdays at 5 p.m. On our show, you'll hear about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. Weekly correspondents like Dr. Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake update us with the latest news from Turtle Island. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Listen weekdays at 5 p.m. or watch the show on Native Roots Radio social media accounts. Ho-wah!
The Park Tavern in St. Louis Park is your summer destination. The patio is amazing, perfect for you and your friends to grab dinner and drinks. Enjoy a game of cornhole while you indulge in the great food. The full Park Tavern menu is available outside. The Park Tavern also has live music on the patio every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and even some Mondays through the summer. Reservations are highly recommended. And if the weather does turn, the bowling lanes at the Park Tavern are always open and are spectacular. On Louisiana Avenue, north of Highway 7 in St. Louis Park, the perfect summer is waiting for you at the Park Tavern.
Hey AM 950 listeners, my name is JP Derbogosian, and I host This Queer Book Saved My Life, the show where LGBTQ guests discuss the queer books that saved their lives in conversation with the very authors who wrote them. This week, I sit down with advocate James Darville to talk about the memoir The Evening Crowd at Kermser's, and Gerardo Samano Cordova tells us about his new horror novel, Monstrillo. I hope you can join us every Sunday at 6 p.m. right here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Okay, I'm not going to disagree that we do need to address the racial wrongs here. We also have to address the fact that these communities are not being served by having a huge gaping highway in the middle of them, cutting it off across, and one crosswalk every, you know, three blocks is not cutting it. Here's just the, you know, and I'm going to just say this. Here's the problems I can already see are going to come up if you just boulevard out 94. One, industry is going to have to leave the area. If you're on, say, the southern side of 280 and you get to 280, that via 94, and now all of a sudden you have to go all the way around the metro, you're going to lose money on gas. And so, and that's kind of counterproductive to what you're trying to do. So they're going to have to move out, which is going to mean jobs are leaving. Industry, businesses are going to leave. Every street east-west will be packed trying to get east and west, especially during morning and afternoon rush. Every east-west street, far worse. There will be much more on the residential areas. Other communities will have to bear the brunt of this. So just sort of saying it's time their turn to pick it up. I don't know if that's good. It's dramatically going to cut the city in half. And I think a lot of businesses would have impact. I'll talk a little bit more about this when we come back. Hour two up next.
Hi, I'm Kelly Kirk.
I'm Chad Larson.
And I'm Joe Kirk.
Your hosts for Searching for Service. Tune in to Rotary's influential show and podcast, sharing touching stories of service locally and abroad.
We bring you weekly guests that connect, inform, and inspire our listeners on all things service.
We highlight diverse service opportunities that appeal to both Rotarians and people driven to serve in their communities.
Tune in Sundays at 3 p.m. or anytime via podcast. It's time
to stop searching
and start serving.
Tune in this Saturday morning right here on AM 950 for the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show from 7 to 8 a.m. We'll be discussing how you can build your soil for a better garden next year, as well as fall bulb planting. Our guest is author and homesteader Melissa K. Norris, and we'll tackle your garden questions. That's all this Saturday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. right here.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.